Hi everybody, welcome to the first episode of the Mind in Salford podcast. I'm Emily and I'm the Strategic Communications Lead here at Mind in Salford. This month is Black History Month and the theme this year is Reclaiming Narratives. The theme gives us a chance to challenge the narratives that have often overlooked the contributions and achievements of Black individuals. It's a chance to showcase success and to shine a brighter light on stories. It is about empowerment, resilience, and strength. I'm really excited today to be joined by John Newton, who is a previous attendee of our Mindfulness PTP training programme. The programme was developed to increase the diversity of qualified mindfulness teachers and the diversity of participants that attended our mindfulness courses. However, we were sensitive to the fact that the two leads on the programme were from white backgrounds, and because of this, the trainee teachers would benefit from mentors who were from similar ethnic backgrounds. We recruited seven mentors and supervisors who would support the trainees through monthly meetings online, where they could discuss their personal mindfulness practice, share resources and reflection on their experience of being a person of colour in the mindfulness field. Since the completion of the course that ran from 2022 to 23, an additional 10 people have qualified through our PTP programme, six of which were people of colour, which is approximately 17% of the total trained. This is bringing us much more in line with the 20% proportion of the GM community that identify as people of colour. This means that we are much better able to serve our diverse communities. Okay, so here's John.
Hi. Oh gosh. Firstly, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your first podcast. I feel very honoured. And yeah, linking into the Black History Month aspect of what we're talking about today, it's something I've really been looking forward to. But just a quick sort of description of me: I'm wearing a very Debenham-like jumper from the store Debenham, a bit of purple, a bit of blue. What's my favourite things? Do you know what? It comes up all the time, Emily. It came up when we were talking earlier in the month. I'm a granddaddy.
Oh, yay!
And I've got my three triplet boys, my three triplet grandsons, which is very unique. As I saw your surprise when I mentioned it. So I've got triplet boys. My daughter had triplet boys in COVID, Noah, Oscar and Archie, and they are absolutely amazing.
Oh, wow. Wonderful names as well. Really strong.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so if you're happy to get straight into things.
Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. So my first question for you is, what does Black History Month mean to you and the purpose of having this conversation through this awareness campaign?
Okay, so as a black man myself who identifies with a dual heritage, I think it's very, very, very important to recognise that black histories are key in allowing individual people to be recognised for their achievements in modern day life, but in past history as well, in respect of, you know, British society, culture. I'm not too sure if we are so knowledgeable about black individuals making some real changes. You know, I believe we've got a hold on the American sort of civil rights movements and massive icons. If you speak about Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, so everybody would know them, their names. But then we've got people from black history who have been very prominent in the British at that time. People like Len Johnson, Manchester mixed race boxer from way back in the 1900s, and I think he was born in 1902, who challenged the coloured bar stance in Manchester as a black boxer. He was not allowed to fight in a British title. He was told he couldn't because of the colour of his skin. There's a movement now to try to build a statue in recognition of Len Johnson's stance against that coloured bar. He eventually was able to fight. He was the first black boxer to fight for a British title. He's a Manchester-born resident. So, you know, do we know about Len Johnson? I think most of us perhaps would struggle with Len Johnson's journeys, story. I think from the black community, I think, yeah, some people would know about him. But it's that type of opportunity, I think, which helps us to find that sense of a lived experience, to find that sense of people who've challenged racism and made Manchester the way it is today, a much more accepting place. So, black, brown, people of colour communities are accepted and honoured and recognised for all that we do in our achievements. So Black History Month, in recognition to me being here today and being able to tell something, to bring in some of my own personal life story and lived experience as a black man, is, I think, an opportunity for people to maybe to relate, to get some sort of understanding and some sort of connection. Because I think I would term my courage to do this is a way of emphasising, promoting connection and community, which are all key aspects of good mental health and emotional well-being.
Amazing. And so me and John kind of caught up before we sat down together, and we were really kind of connecting on lived experience, weren't we? And how having a platform like this is so amazing to reach diverse communities, and how providing a space, I think, really allows us to get to know people and their experiences and their trueness. And the reason that we're doing this is hopefully to make you feel empowered and to share your amazing kind of story through the training program as well. So just to kind of segue onto that, how did you actually end up partaking in our mindfulness PTP training program? And how do you feel that that's shaped your story?
Okay, so I think it's important to bring it back to my time before MIND, before the practitioner's teaching program, PTP. Just as myself on my own journey, I think I have no shame now in saying that I've struggled with my own mental health, my own sense of well-being, due to my blackness, due to my experience of racism. Me, I think that undercurrent of trauma has sat unconsciously, where some of my life choices and behaviours essentially has been about trying to repel pain in my life due to those experiences of racism and discrimination and prejudice. Trying to work some of that stuff out, trying to be able to look at that sort of emotional residue of those experiences has been an ongoing journey, journey of self-discovery and also self-care and self-awareness about, you know, what's actually going on here. And I think it's really key, Emily, to say that my understanding is, when I've worked around and been around black people, people of colour. It's a painful story for most of those individuals and communities, linked back to racism, linked back to generational trauma, individual trauma, and collective trauma, as in the communities that we live in. Generational trauma, as in, you know, if you're coming from the African Caribbean descent, heritage, you've got linkages to slavery. You've got linkages to oppression and violence. Mm-hmm. And that's passed down, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of research now that's saying that genetics, you know, lived experiences, those horrific moments in people's lives from mums and dads is passed down through our bodies. There is a American therapist, American community activist called Razma Manakam. He wrote a book called My Grandmother's Hands, a book around healing racialized trauma. And he very much talks about embodied somatic feelings, sensations are really key in recognizing trauma and working with trauma in respect of supporting somebody who's lived a traumatic experience. So I put myself as a person who's had very much, especially around my childhood, young adult life, experience lots of trauma, and to be able now to have a resource like mindfulness to be able to be in that felt sensation, feeling place and awareness around what that is, as opposed to being in that head, that logic, that thinking place, gives me a lot of strength, gives me a lot of space, gives me a lot of capacity to just to check in there and just to work out what's going on here. Mm. So leading up to the PTP course, being trained to deliver the MBSR, yeah, has been a real life changer for me, because it gives me that day-to-day resource, that day-to-day ability just to check in, just to be around that emotional regulation aspect of what we do in our lives, and just to bring that sense of I'm in the moment, whatever's here, I'm not judging, I'm not making, you know, judgments, or I'm not being tough on myself, I'm just giving myself, allowing it to be whatever it is, and to be with that. And just to be with that attention, to be with this, whatever it is, and to be okay with whatever that is in that moment, which is essentially what mindfulness is.
So it sounds as though it's provided you with a real tool for safety within your own self, within your own body, within your own experience.
Yeah.
Has that been a bit of a journey to be able to get to that kind of place? Because I know that mindfulness is, it's quite a skill, really.
Yeah, it's you know, you have to be disciplined. You have to be very intentional around mindfulness, I believe, as much as you can. But yeah, I think going back to the lived experience of racism, that sense of all these emotions, you know, specifically shame, you know, as a sense of my blackness, my colour of my skin being something to be belittled, being something where you don't belong, being something where you're on the outside of things. Shame is in there. So it's a strong emotion, as we both know. Mm. So I couldn't talk to somebody about, or ask somebody, or get somebody to tell me what the heck is going on here, because trauma is something which has happened to an individual, I believe, not something that the individual has made or is doing. It's something which trauma is something which, an experience which is an emotional wound. done from somebody on the outside of that individual, you know, a society, a social, a institutional context of something being put onto them, a traumatic experience. It's a lifelong wound, and that needs to be attended to, an emotional wound. So for me to work out, this is not me doing this, this is somebody doing, this is something happening to me, and I'm not able to ask somebody, what the heck is going on here? Why is this happening? And somebody not being able to tell me, or not wanting to tell me, this is what's going on, because they, you know, because they don't know how to, or you know, the societal, you know, sort of stance on racism can be really, really unsupportive, can't it, around, you know, black people and people of colour. So it's that sense of, I don't know what's going on. It's really scary. It's really emotive. It's really impacting. You know, what do I do with this? So, yeah, going back to why mindfulness has been a key in helping me to make some sense out of that is because I can be in that awareness, and I can be able to say, yeah, this is not me, this is something else, but I'm charged, I'm feeling sensation, I'm feeling this force, I'm feeling these emotive emotions, but I can be with that, and I can settle myself with that, and I can take some strength from that. I'm not going to be led by that disassociation, that flight, you know, that freeze element of what we can do when we have a traumatic experience, a relived traumatic experience. Let's be, you know, clear. You know, if you're reliving trauma, you know, you're having a really bad time, you know. And as a black person and as black communities and you know, what we experience in society is quite a lot of, you know, relived trauma.
It's so amazing to hear how you have taken something so painful and you have basically found tools and techniques that allow you to face that pain, acknowledge that pain, and also be your kind of answer to it as well. I think it's really, really powerful. How has that been teaching other people then, that practice? How's that felt for you?
Okay. I think it's interesting. It's a position I think I've been able to use. Mindfulness as a platform, as an opportunity to work with people of colour, black and brown people in communities. And I think, again, if I bring it back to my long-running work as a youth and community worker, it brings in that value of grassroots work, sort of that group work with communities, which brings together a shared experience, a connection in regards to, you know, I'm sitting with people who look like me, essentially, who may want, you know, have had a similar experiences, or maybe not, but there's some sense of connection there to start with. I think that's a solid base to work from. And then, you know, there's this terminology, I think, social prescribing, which is around, you know, mental health being, emotional well-being being supported without medication. So that relational, conversational, group work approach, which I think the MBSR offers, is a really good tool to bring a sense of connection, bring a sense of community, and actually have that really helpful message of, I'm not alone here. There's people similar to me who are experiencing similar things, similar experiences, you know, and we're trying to work through that together. This thing called mindfulness may be a way. It's not going to be, you know, if you've got really sort of, you know, extended mental health conditions which are clinical and quite entrenched, yeah, you know, maybe some mindfulness can help. But I think for an integrated approach around bringing together mindfulness with something else in your life, you know, exercise, walking, you know, having those hobbies, you know, all the five ways to well-being stuff we know about, which are all key, I think it gives you a solid platform to keep your well-being at a good place, I think. So that, you know, using mindfulness and then connecting with that cultural aspect of being around black and brown people, people of colour, using that cultural aspect of shared experiences gives us that connection and gives us that courage, I think, to say, actually, you know, I deserve better. I want to be in a place where I'm, you know, I'm not surviving. I'm actually thriving, you know, I'm actually proud of what I'm doing. I feel like I'm part of something which is important, and I've got some pride in what I do, and you know, I've got some acceptance in what I do. And I think with the 8-week course, again, it's 8 weeks, as you know, the MBSR, it brings in all the aspects of allowing, accepting, trust. It brings in patience. It brings in all those key principles, I think, of essentially what makes us feel okay, what makes us feel, you know, sometimes when we need a bit of strength in when we're struggling, you know, we can bring those principles in and help us to, you know, shift a little bit in how we are coping, mm-hmm. how we are working out stuff, you know. And the hotspots are, Emily, aren't they? The hotspots in our lives are, you know, those key areas in our lives are family relationships, workplaces, your own personal relationships, you know, with loved ones, you know. And, you know, the big one is your relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the one which I think sometimes people forget. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to start from yourself, maybe, and just that spirituality of, mm-hmm. of how you see yourself and what's important for you and what you stand for. And again, there's a saying, isn't it? But if you're kinder to yourself, there's a big chance you've got to be kinder to other people around you. And that's what mindfulness brings.
So it sounds as though it's been really kind of life-changing for you. And the thing that's coming up in our conversation when I'm listening to your incredible journey is this real importance of identity and feeling a sense of connection to our identity with all of the things that go into that, the relationships, your religion, your culture. Do you feel as though mindfulness has helped that sense of identity for you in any way?
Oh, yeah. It's identity for me is key, isn't it? As we've chatted before, you know, you've got to know me, and I again, we're not visualizing. This is a talking podcast. So, you know, I'm a black man. As I said, I identify as a black man first. My shade of blackness is more towards the browner, darker side, as opposed to the more lighter coffee sort of shade of a mixed race identity. But you know, I've got a white dad. I had a white dad. He's not around now. And I've got an African black mum from Ghana. So it's a mixture of whiteness and blackness from my heritage. Has it been something which has been accepted? Because my shade is that I get that question of, oh, you can't be mixed race because you're too dark, you know? And then I get that that internalised sense of, well, where's my place here? I'm stepping into whiteness, you know, I can't go there because I'm too dark. And I'm stepping into blackness, I can't go there because I'm too dark. So, yeah, identity is key in some of my own sense of acceptance and journey. What does mindfulness do in regards to supporting that sense of identity? I think it just gives me that, again, it just gives me that sense of working that out and just being able to have that space and understanding and actually belonging and connection in regards to where I was maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago. I'm an old guy now, so it goes into 20 years, sort of 25 years, 30 years of where I was quite angry, quite confused, you know, about who I was and where my place was. So now, as I've got older and worked out things in a much more sort of self-caring way in regards to, I am what I am, and I'm happy with that. If you've got some label you want to put on me, if you've got some sense of you're telling me how I should be and you know nothing about me, well, you have that. But I know where I'm from. I know my heritage. I know my journey. And I'm better with that. And that's about me being able to accept that in a really rich and honoured way. Because I do challenge that concept of, what is mixed race, mixed heritage, dual heritage? What, you know, what shade should you be? What the hell does blackness mean? You know, how black should you be? What does black mean? You know, what's that label mean? And I know now, with that understanding and that experience, that it means different things to different people, and we just can't hold it down to this is the one label, and we've got to stick to that. And a part of my story, my journey, is that I can bring that sort of challenge, or I can bring that awareness of identity being something which, you know, is fluid. Mm. You know, we're not pinned down to one way of being, one way of, yeah, this is a label that fits all of us. So I think being able to reflect, do it safely, as you say, secure attachments are all there, and part of that resource is certainly being able to practice and to be in spaces which is calming and present and accepting, and that's what mindfulness brings.
Amazing. That's fantastic. And you've touched slightly there on the different interpretations that exist within society and the differences in labels. What do you think that we can do better as a society to allow people from the black community, black individuals, how do you think that we can improve the storytelling that happens and reclaiming narratives of people from that community?
Great question. I think it's crucial, isn't it? I think if we're in a place where we are able to speak about our experiences and bring that storytelling to places which are able to listen to the stories and able to take on board the learning from those stories is also key, I think. I think society, if I bring it to the UK, to Britain, I think earlier I spoke about Manchester's Len Johnson. You know, I think we need to know more about other stories of black people, people of colour who've challenged the status quo, challenged the authorities in regards to making it a more equitable world, a more inclusive world, but we live in the UK, in Britain. But I think the opportunity to tell your story gives people the platform to be truthful and to bring their own truths and to say it in a way which is real to them and it brings in the sense of connection and belonging again in regards to this is what's happened to me, something good or something not so good, but this is my reality. This is something which has happened to me, and you know I want to say that. I want to share that. I want to be able to encourage people to be curious, but also to be understanding. And you know, I struggle with maybe the empathic part of that story being told, because again, we're in those dimensions of, you know, as a white person, can you be really, truly understanding of a black experience? Maybe not. But isn't there something about just being able to listen to that without judgment, and just to be able to maybe relate to a certain level and bring some sense of connection to that, some sense of emotion? I can feel some of that pain, or I can feel some of that joy. I can feel some of that that sort of sense of being human together, that common humanity, which again is so key in helping us to have a more accepting society, a much more progressive society. That sense of common humanity through storytelling is so important. So you know, where do we tell these stories? I think, again, you know, we've talked about school curriculums, school environments. Can they be alongside, you know, the conventional stuff, the mainstream things, you know, inside schools, inside institutions, inside organisations? Can there be a sense of an equal importance in telling a story from a black lived experience? Can that be seen as something just as important as the majority mainstream, you know, history of the UK? I think sometimes that doesn't seem to be something which is promoted so well. Yeah, I think society, again, I go back to my role as a youth and community worker. You know, we spoke about where does that child, where does that young person get a sense of belonging, a sense of I'm part of something? You know, if that's not there, and they tell the story about what that means to them, maybe we can learn from that, and maybe we can actually, you know, work harder to bring those people on board and to get a sense of just yeah, you know, they're just as important as everybody else. You know, that we want to align our young people, our children, young people into society, and to be, you know, a part of how we can progress as a nation, and how we can, yeah, how we can get through those difficult areas of our lives, you know, around race, around sexuality, around gender, around all those things we know which keep societies, you know, running. And stories are a massive part of that. So, yeah, I'm not sure if I answered the question as such, but I just wanted to emphasise the importance of storytelling and narratives, but also that it's done from an authentic, real lived experience. You know, it's so key for us to be able to listen to sometimes very painful things and to be held in that charge, that emotional charge, and to hold what's going on for you, you know, in that moment, and trying to sort of work out this is something which is really painful, but I get a sense of connection here, understanding here, and, you know, and I'm more open to what's going on for me, and maybe dropping some of my own defences in that experience.
John, thank you so much. You've been amazing. Thank you so much for being so open and honest and for sharing your story. It has been invaluable. And I'm sure we'll hear more from you again.
Oh, thank you, Emily. Thank you so much. Until next time.
Until next time.